March 23, 2024, so off from Pedro's show. Pedro Show, happy Saturday. Started off with John Coltrane doing You're a Weaver of Dreams. Then we had the Almighty Yop with Belmont Ring. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me Almighty Yop. Welcome aboard, Almighty.
Thanks for having me, Mike. How are you?
glad to have you aboard, and we can do this. I had some difficulties about it. Yeah, I didn't ask you, but thank you for volunteering. Yeah. I had some difficulties. No internet in my pad for 6 weeks. Thank you, AT&T, for keeping up your infrastructure. But you got to it eventually, and so I'm able to try and catch up. And we were supposed to do this a month ago. Almighty, please give me your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection? Driving around with my mom, all those kind of songs like Fleetwood Mac and Kim Carnes and all that kind of stuff. Driving around in a red, crappy little Ford car. All that late 60s, early 70s pop stuff is like my earliest recollection, along with, you know, Beatles stuff and all that. That's, yeah, just driving around with my mom, whatever she was playing, it was mostly whatever was on the radio.
And the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Yeah, my sister's a concert pianist, and she's a harpist as well. So we always had instruments there. It's funny, I learned, my parents were rather strict about her practicing regimen, and early on I thought, geez, I don't want to get involved with any of that because it just seemed like more chores to do, you know, and that's how it was kind of presented, where it didn't seem to come, because my parents aren't musicians, it didn't come from a place of fun, it came more from a place of being studious, which now that I'm older, I wish I would have taken advantage of. But at the time, I said, no, I don't want to play. I always loved singing and all that stuff. I love music deeply, but I just didn't want, at the time when you're a little kid, you're like, I'd rather be playing. There's like an extra bunch of homework that I have to do, you know?
Well, what about not institutionalized? What about just jumping on the shit when no one was around?
I did a lot of that, you know, but, you know, at the time it was more like,
I think that is just as vital in a way, especially sure. When you're a kid.
I agree, yeah.
What about, let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
I was in some choir, did a lot of singing growing up, yeah, for sure.
No, I'm talking about school, because I asked this question to everybody, because a lot of schools got rid of their arts programs, because they said it was, not core enough or something. So your school had it, and you were in
it
the
did.
Choir.
And I did some drama.
This is my personal opinion, but I consider the voice an instrument. In fact, I think it probably was one of the first ones besides the feet, or maybe beating on your chest, maybe your body as a drum. So right. I don't make a distinction between, machinery that you get sounds out of using your voice or your body. So. And I know a lot of early rock and rollers learned how to sing in church.
Sure.
And so there's something about, you know, even though they're institutions and chores and that shit, there's something about maybe not being as afraid because you're with a group of people and maybe even get in a static state. Like with the church.
I agree.
Maybe can have them at a football game at school or something. I don't know. So let me ask you this.
I agree.
First record you bought with your own money, please, almighty.
Oh, my goodness, my first record. Jeez, Mike.
And you bought with your own money, because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so that's why I asked.
I think it was Van Halen 1984, to be honest.
And what about the first gig you saw?
Jeez, that was much later. I didn't see a lot of shows growing up, so the first gig I ever went to... It slipped my, I don't know. I can't even tell you.
I can tell you mine. It was T-Rex, 1973.
Wow.
I was 15 years old. Me and D. Boone saw me. Yeah, but it was, he's like 32nd of an inch tall because it was, you know, Long Beach Auditorium. They tore it down.
Yeah.
But you must have had a first gig where you saw people playing live.
No, I didn't. But I'm trying to think, like, what the very first
thing
I ever saw.
Let's walk from Pedro show, so there's no fucking hard questions, and definitely there's no wrong answers, so that's okay. Don't worry about it. Let go of that.
I saw Run DMC at an early age.
Yeah, but I'm asking for the first one. If you can't remember, you can't. Don't worry. Look, let me ask you this. I'm not talking about graduating school, but after school in the afternoon... The basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band? Did you get into any kind of shit like that?
Just with myself, not with people. I'm telling you, I never played in bands growing up. I was always writing something, whether it was lyrical or musical myself, but it was never a band. I jumped into a band for a second in high school, and it was just short lived. I don't know. It didn't pan out and turn into anything. And I had a lot of insecurities about playing with people. I was doing all this stuff by myself. It goes for making art as well. I was always doing things by myself, and it was always this, like, solitary thing that I was doing. It wasn't
I bet you 99% of painters paint by themselves.
Right.
But music has got this kind of thing where you can do ensembles. But, you know, with multi-tracks, you can have the one-man band thing. And, you know,
sure.
I've had a lot of cats on the show. Well, we got actually professional examples like Stevie Wonder and Prince. They made records where they played everything. Dave Grohl's first Foo Fighter record. They usually started with the drums. So when you were doing your one-man music thing, did you have a cassette recorder or did you use a
computer? I had a four-track, and I was doing all of the parts with my voice. So I would do anything I could think of. I'd do the guitar parts, I'd do the horn parts, I'd do the bass, everything with my mouth. And it was all, when I think back on it, one of the things that turned me on later, when I was doing a lot of that with a little crappy four-track at home, and then I heard this first John Frusciante record when it came out. And I don't know why that record made me think, wow, this is something I could really, as a virtuoso player, not to downplay him, but at the time, it made me feel that stuff was very attainable, that you could do something at home and it could be accepted by somebody, you know, because there's always this magic of the studio or something. When I was younger, I was like, it's just this silly stuff that I make at home for myself. But when I heard that record, it really changed something into me, and I listened to it for years, and then I talked to a friend. My friend Russ is a killer bass player, plays in all different types of styles, and I was listening to that record like I did quite a bit, and I called him from work, and I said, you know, he owed me a little bit of money, and I said, if you don't give me any, you don't have to pay me for the money, or give me the money when I just want you to show me some stuff on the guitar. And he said, when you come home to, I was living with him at the time. He's like, when you come home from work today, I'm going to show you all. And he just, you know, all the basic chords. And I became obsessed. I started playing, you know, I started playing hours and hours a day. And it just turned into this, I still do it now. Like it's just the most fun, rewarding thing that I do in art. You know, it's making music stuff. It's something that always makes me feel great after I'm done doing it, you know?
Well, you know, a lot of people might not know, because you're on the show and you got songs. Actually, your performance stuff didn't start with music, right? It's some kind of theater, some kind of puppet trip.
Well, there's puppets involved. That Almighty Op is a place where all my stuff came together. I was always trying to keep these things separate. So it'd be like, this is
no, no. What I'm trying to say, Almighty, is like you. I kind of know a little bit, but try to make it for listeners who only know you by these songs that I'm playing. That you had this other kind of artistic expression.
Well, let me say, Almighty Op started with all these things that I was doing were, like, I was doing art stuff with making puppets and masks and all these things, and I was making music, and then Almighty Op came together as this one thing where I could do my illustration stuff for it, and I could do the songs, and I could do video stuff with it, and I could also do which became this performance art thing that I did for 20 years. I've been doing it for over 20 years, but about 20 years on a street corner in Koreatown, which is the corner of Western and Elmwood. And the last Saturday of every month, it was this performance that I would do, and it unfolded out of bicycles. And it runs on generators and stuff. And it's not busking in that there's so much involved in it. There was a interaction with the audience, and there's the different gags and things that I would do that involved the audience. And then there's the marionettes and shadow puppets and hand puppets, all these different things. And then it's funny, you know, like all of this really started. I mean, I was making all that stuff for art, but one of the things the show was doing for me is that I was talking a little earlier about being insecure and about singing in front of people and being, I don't know, it's, you know, people talk about masks and stuff all the time. What I was doing, I'm wearing a mask and I'm behind a curtain and then I'm singing in the, back in the day, I was singing in this little tiny voice. I was all these little things that, were hiding who, not who I was, but it was letting me be who I was in front of people because they weren't seeing me. I actually read this thing recently about people sometimes singing in a very high falsetto voice as being a mask for another type of mask to sing, you know, to hide behind. So, yeah, all these things, and it was a very ritualistic thing. So the last Saturday of every month, I'd get to do this thing and become this thing, and you know, it started out with six people showing up there on the corner, and then turned into this really, you know, something that just means the world to me. And I kind of had to stop it. There's a lot of things that happened in my life that have postponed that. But it's going to pick up again real soon.
Yeah, I'm going to play another song you gave me. This is Cover Us.
It's just like it's yesterday. Only different. Approach didn't happen. And all I hear are the nice things you say. Sounds like you.
You just can never say enough. 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 for a
Take my hand, jump on my back, 'cause I'm the man. Pass me a black napkin, please. Dropped out of college, don't have a degree, and I can't get a date. It's not my fault. I'm not bringing home the juice. I'm not bringing home the bacon. Good enough for Nancy. Good enough for Nancy. So what if I like the big truck? So what if I like the big truck? Giddy up, giddy up. Don't call me toxic, just 'cause I like your gut. Not my father's boy, man. Take my hand, jump on my back, 'cause I'm the man. I'm not ideal, I'm a person. I won the war, but lost my way. But I can buy as much as anyone. I like to shave my beard just so, manicure my nails, put on a skirt. But at the end of the day, I lost my way. Don't make me have to hide or explain what I am inside. I'm good enough for Nancy. Good enough for Nancy. Good enough for Nancy. Good enough for Nancy.
Thank you. Every time is still new. Where this takes me, I'll share it with all of you. That's you, a little fool who's been fooled. I owe it all to you. That's you, the little clown they refuse. Self-portrait I paint of you in baby blue. To bear me when I get down on you. The gift that you gave me, I give back to you. A full circle returning of what we found was true. That's you, little fool who's been fooled. I owe. In baby blue, 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 baby.
Peter, show that chunky music started off with Almighty Op doing Cover Us. Then Model Home, brand new. This is Death Equals Dollar Signs out of D.C. area. Brother Pat and Nappy. Oneida, I think that's how you pronounce it. I did something with them 14 years ago and they just put it out. This track on Joyful Noise Recordings. It's called Tusco. And Still House Plants. I think they're living in London now, but they were Glasgow originally. No Sleep, Deep Risk. Kim Gordon is new from her. She's got a tour coming too. I'm a Man. Noisuka, Planet Earth. The Dictators. Albert Bouchard from Blue Oyster Cult playing drums now with Adney Smirnoff. My Imaginary Friend, and who was that? It was Casper, right? But not in their song, in their world. Do you remember their original singer, Handsome Dick? Yeah, Trippy Cat. Almighty Op, finally, Baby Blue. And people, these three Almighty Op songs you just heard now. It's got Larry Mullins on drums, and myself on the bass helping Almighty with these tunes. And, of course, Johnny with on the knobs and stuff. And Almighty picked the order of these tunes. He wanted these up first. But I don't know if they're the first. I mean, you kind of described you making why you were behind the curtain and all this. But what was the evolution of the thing? Was the puppet show first? Because,
no, it was all the same thing, Mike. It all came out together. So I was doing all these things separately, and I didn't have a name for what I was doing. And then I thought, you know, I'm gonna just mix all this together. And that was the place where it was always the music and the whole thing as one thing, you know.
What I mean is, like the first time you put it on the street, there was the music and the puppets.
Yeah,
was there just
always
a puppet thing, or was there just a music thing? There was no, like, kind of evolution.
No, the evolution was, it wasn't called Almighty Op at that time. So, like I said, there was, like, there's a time when I was just doing all these little things for fun and doing.
Well, let me here, because see, we're talking like because we're kind of familiar, but we gotta act like people who don't know you. So
sure,
you said K Town, but you ain't from K Town, right? You're Pittsburgh.
No,
you're P Town.
I'm from Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Okay. Did you do any of this music? Because this is what I asked you before about kind of having those bedroom basement, and you did, but they were man alone. But did you ever do any performances in Pittsburgh?
Never. Not in front of people, ever. Okay. Not once.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, so it all started here. So even though you were doing all, it was kind of like prep work back there.
That's right.
Well, what led you to come out here?
Well, I came out here to work in movie stuff when I was young. In 1995, I was 19, I came out to work in movie stuff, and I found that I didn't like that scene. I was in this position where I thought, Jesus, I was telling you, I was making masks and doing all this other stuff, and I thought, wow, this is what I know how to do, and I don't want to.
Oh, you're like, you're
going to
be like, not an actor, but a guy who like does sets and costumes and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was making masks and doing makeup and stuff like that, and I just thought, geez, I love doing the stuff, but I don't like doing it for that scene, which I thought I did when I was a little kid. I thought that.
Well, I remember the first time, you know, I lived in Pedro.
And it just did not.
I came from Virginia, you know, and I was in Pedro for many years before I went to Hollywood. I remember taking my bike up there, 15 years old, and, yeah, boy, this ain't like I imagined it. So it was kind of like that for you? Well, maybe not, because you were trying to work it, too, right?
And I went on set for something, and just the way that people were treating each other on set, and it just wasn't for me. It wasn't what I thought it was, and then I'm thinking, like, what the hell am I going to do? I don't know how to do much of anything. I was doing, you know, music didn't seem to be something where I thought I could do that as...
Like in school, you didn't do drama, right?
But it would seem like a sideline.
What I'm saying is, like, in school...
But what? See,
in school, you weren't in drama?
Yeah. I was, yeah.
Oh, you were?
I was, and that's what I was doing, saying was choir, and I was doing singing and drama stuff, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, drama, I don't know, it seemed kind of separate here, but then I went to school in the 70s. But it seemed, I wish I would have hung out more with the drama guys, because they seemed like they were the most secure in their self, they're more balls out. And it seemed the people in music, they kind of gravitated to music because they were kind of shy, you know. They wanted to be, because that's arena rock days, right? So everybody wanted to be part of the crowd. I thought the drama guys and women were the most brave motherfuckers alive. But just personally, I just thought.
Right, and it's funny because I was telling you, I don't know where along the way that I got this an odd insecurity. I mean, I'll tell you one. I was in drama when I was younger in choir stuff. It was kind of combined, and I was singing, and a girl who was there, a younger girl, said, "You sing like an old lady," she said to me, and I don't know why. And I was like, because I was putting vibrato and stuff, and I don't know why that made
well,
me like
you
it was
know
like
what?
A turtle pulling his turtle head in
because
the shell.
You were doing
like,
you were doing characters.
Like,
I mean, this lady got I think this lady got confused with the person and the character.
Right.
Right. Now,
it made me feel horrible.
Now, this happens to people.
Like,
this happens to people, you know, who are getting known as a role on television or something. People are talking to them in the street like that. Yeah. But you know what? You know, what about, there is a mixture. It's called musical. They're not really in fashion anymore, but the musical. Were you in any of those?
I was. I've been in a couple of those things. I did Godspell when I was little, like all kinds of, like a bunch of different things. Yeah. And I love all that kind of music. Like, you know,
yeah, but
Annie
you didn't pursue
musicals.
That, right? You wanted to be more of a set maker, a costume maker?
Yeah, because I got into painting and I got into making, my grandpa was a guy who, he was a jeweler and a dental tech and stuff. I started making stuff with him, and I still to this day, I love making things. I mean, music's the same way. It's building stuff for me. It's all like form and detail, and it's all the same thing, whether you're playing ping pong or whether you're, you know, making a song or whether you're making a puppet or whatever. It all comes from the same place for me, in that you're making this, you make a form, and then you're making like a primary form, a secondary form, and then little details on top of that. And I just like making all anything, you know, it's all the same stuff.
Okay. And so when was the first gig you did in Koreatown?
So Koreatown, I think the first one was in 2006, and I had done some shows. We did a bunch of like venue shows before that. So it started in 2003. I did things like Mr. T's Bowl and all these different places as like a stage show kind of thing. And it always felt weird. It didn't feel like it felt like people were kind of removed from us. And here we are, doing this, and they couldn't kind of get close to it because of the state. I don't know. It was just a very weird scene.
What do you mean we? I thought this was Man Alone.
Well, it is, but I had other people helping me over the years. So my friend Cranko helped me for a long time. I have Shambles, a gentleman named Shu Schwab.
Okay, I don't know. We got to move on to the second hour. People,
yeah.
It's March 23, 2024. Schwab, Peter is a special guest on my yacht. Hold tight for hour two. March 23, 2024, it's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
Rachel Korn, how I have missed you sitting early by the door. Every morning when she said she's waited for so long for His Majesty. Been messing with our medications when this is a man who has a boy devised a plan to decorate this place first rate, pastel everything. Drain you out. Gay morning. Gay morning. heroes have fallen. Where you had raised them, as soon as you met them, they proved themselves graceless, jumped off the pages as if they weren't human. You couldn't remove them, you mythologized them, mythologized them. But the spell has been broken.
for Pedro show. Start off the second hour, Almighty Op doing Gay Good Morning. Ray Shin with Best Laid Plans. Almighty Op, the spell's been broken. So let's talk about these recordings. I told the people, me and Larry helped you with those first three songs.
Yeah.
But me and Larry, well, Larry might be on some of these, but I ain't on these. So
right.
I want to talk about these recordings. When does, how does the recording fit in with the timeline of Mr. T-Bold to Koreatown to, what was it, United Artists?
Yeah, it's such a strange trajectory.
United,
you know?
Recording, yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird trajectory. I mean, I've always recorded at home. I was, you know, I've tried to get better at recording over the years. I've made some big jumps in the last few years, but I, you know, was always doing these home recordings and, you know, and I wanted them to get better and better. And I, and then when, what happened was, you know, a gentleman kept staying after, when we were in Koreatown. I do a service in Koreatown, and I don't call them shows, by the way. I call them services in Koreatown. And a gentleman kept staying after, and his name's Johnny Morgan, Knob Man Johnny Morgan. And he kept staying a little longer every month for about 3 or 4 months. And then finally he's like, look, I do recordings. I want to record you, and you should come. And he had listened to all these old recordings that I had done. I never usually meet anybody after a service, and I met him. And he said, come to my house. We had dinner, and then he said, come to my house, and I'm going to record you there. So I went over there once or twice, and he recorded me, and I really liked. He's such a nice guy, and I liked what he was doing with what I do, and he was teaching, like showing me a lot about recording as well, about, because you know, Mike, like I know how to explain certain things, but it's not the right lingo for like, I thought, oh, I want to do, you know, how do I do this thing? And I'm trying to explain it to him. And other people had kind of shrugged that off in the past, but Johnny's like, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's this. And he would show me like how to scoop something out and get rid of like muddy, low endy, muddy stuff or something. And I just didn't know how to describe to him what, because I didn't know the technical terms for it, but and then like the third time I was going to meet with him, he said, hey, an opening opened up at my work. Why don't you come down here and I'll record you at my work. I had no idea where he worked, and I show up and it's United Recording, and I don't know as much as other people know about the history of it, but when I walked into the place and you see the stuff hanging on the walls and what this place actually is in the history, I mean, I was like, what in the hell am I doing here? And I went in and recorded a bunch of tunes of them, just me and Johnny, by myself. And then, you know, as far as Larry goes, Larry had come. He's a friend of a friend. I've known who Larry is for a long time. And I mean, his discography and everything, you know, I was always a fan. And, he came to a service on the street corner. This is years and years ago, 6 years ago or so. And he sent me an email the next day, and he said, hey, my wife and I saw this service. We love everything you do. We love the show in general. We like the music. We like the puppets. We like what you do with the audience. And I wrote him back and said, you know, thanks so much and this and that. And then a bunch of years went by, and I don't know, I got up some beer muscles or something one night, and I said to my wife, I'm just going to write Larry. I'm going to reply to this old email, and I'm going to write Larry. And I said, Larry, if you remember me, I did this service back here, and if you I'll buy you a ticket from Germany, because he lives in Berlin. If I buy you a ticket from Germany, will you put on a record with me of my songs? And he wrote me back immediately, and he's like, I want to do it. He's like, of course I'll do it. I couldn't believe it. And he sent me like, you know, passport information and two possible tickets, and then I mentioned it to Johnny, and Johnny said, we'll do it at United Recording. And and he gave me this, like, you know, like, I'd be able to use this studio, and it just all lined up. And then, you know, as you know, my wife knows you and asked you, and Larry was already involved, and you do Stooges with him. And then the next thing you know, I'll tell you what, Mike, I don't know if you've ever seen Videodrome, the movie Videodrome, but it's one of two times in my life where I felt like Max Wren, where all of a sudden, like, I was in the, you know, I'm in the movie, or like inside the TV. So I'm like looking around, and I'm going like, how did this all work out? I'm standing in this incredible studio. You're there. Larry's there. And then we made all these tunes in 3 days, and then we all came and did it again. A month later, we came and did it again. And I don't know, just like real fortunate and that all happened. And it was just a real lucky thing, you know?
I think these tunes here, though, are from your pad. This I'm going to play Humorless World.
Yeah.
Cover up your face and go to hand out bloody noses to who doesn't know what's coming. Stand back and do nothing while cheering on another one. Civility forgotten. To me, what a humorless world this would be. To me, what a humorless world this would be. So pack up all your things to find some other one to nod their heads and help you to destroy something. So they who are not right, you see, and anyone who disagrees will feel the force of othering. To me, what a humorless world this would be. To me, what a humorless world this would be. Thank you. Think about what you think of me, and with welled up tender little sighs tucked inside your secret room in my mind. Cooing caused by these sacred sounds, small deposits for some other time. Scenes of crying, cock-eyed cots and candy eyes. And all those giggles, they sound so sweet. They've come to save a wretch like me. Oh, you supple little bundle of meat. They say that you look just like me. And bless your little heart, I was so close to finding me gone. Bless your little heart, I will undo each one of these wrongs. Bless, oh bless, bless your little heart. I think about what I used to think, all the events that changed me and why. I need these crying, cock-eyed cots and candy eyes. The semi-talented derelict must forget himself for half the time, kicking and screaming, these inner demons, these demons are mine. They sound so sweet. They've come to save a wretch like me. Oh, you supple little bundle of meat. They say that you look just like me. Bless your little heart, I was so close to finding me gone. Bless your little heart, I will undo each one of my wrongs. Bless, oh bless, bless your little heart.
Watch for Pedro Show. That chunk, Cumulus World, Almighty Yacht. Then Gollum had this big piece here. Worlds of Life, this is side A, it's two-sided thing. Piece of vinyl, huh? This is the A side. World in a Life, one. Tomorrow's show, I'll play two, the other side. Then Almighty Yacht with Bless Your Little Heart. So, let me ask you this, Almighty, about tunes, you know. Some people I have on the show, they like to talk about their tunes. Yeah. Other people, they're like, fuck, what? I don't want to talk about it. That's why I recorded them. So, no, and I think both ways is okay. So, what sure. persuasion is you, Almighty?
A bit of both. I mean, I don't know. I like I told you before, I like making stuff. That Humorless World song, I made it home. That one's one I made by myself here at the house. I don't know. I just wake up every morning and I try to write a little melody or something every day before I start other stuff that I have to do. A lot of have to's in this that I have set up for myself. But I try to write a little melody or a tune every morning. And done that for a really long time. And, we can talk about my tunes or other people's tunes or whatever.
No, let's just talk about, let's keep the focus on the shit that I play because then people have something to reference. Like these first three songs that me and Larry help you with.
Yeah.
Oh, do you need me to refresh your memory? Belmont Rank covers Baby Blue.
Well, they're recreations of it's. You know, here's people talk about like recreating demos and how, and I it was neat with you guys because I it turned into things that I didn't think it was, and I kept trying to pull it in because they are songs. You know, I remember you and I had a couple of talks where it was, you know, how far can we stray from the song, and they are like a singer songwriter song. So there was a point when I. You know, you have to kind of keep them dialed in. You don't have to, but you kind of keep them dialed into being what the song is. But then you're stuck between recreating a demo, which you'll never be able to do because you listen to a demo, like the original songs for me. They're almost always demos because I'm doing them at home. But and you get kind of tied into what they sound like without anybody else playing on them or what they are. So
okay, let's talk about just with you, like, Do words come first or do music come first? Or
always almost always the music, yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes
okay.
I have like a lyric will hit me and then I'll put it in my wallet or something or on. I write it down and I'll carry it around for a while. And then when the music comes along and hits, then I'll like, oh, that little thing will go with that. But it's always the music.
Well, let's get specific. No, but let's get fucking specific, like Belmont Ring.
Yeah. Yeah, music first for sure with that one.
And, you know. And what, the music, does it kind of drive where the words are going to go? Or do you have like
a
notebook full of lyric? Or do you write on demand?
Yeah, I have a bunch of stuff sitting there.
That stuff
that's
in your wallet? You're saying that you put little stuff in your wallet?
Yeah. I'll have stuff sitting there.
Well let's get specific. Like there's Belmont.
Yeah. Yeah, Belmont Rink. I started writing all this. I started playing the guitar, and then Belmont Rink just went into my mind. It's a place I used to ice skate when I was a little kid, and then all the rest of it just fell in place. But it was all started with just like, you know, playing those chords and goofing around, and then a word will pop into my head or something, and then it just usually goes from there. You know, I'll kind of trail off on an idea of that first word or that first series of the first idea that pops in is usually the thing that it becomes. Very rarely do I like scrap that thing that pops into my head that goes with it. You know, it usually has some kind of a theme connected with it at the end.
So you're revisiting a child thing with that tune. What about covers?
Cover Us was it's like that one's more like a poetic idea, but it's there's a I took a little kid. It was my friend's niece. I took her to the beach and we at Venice Beach, and she was on my shoulders, and I stood up over by those big rocks that kind of keep the waves going. We stood up on those rocks, and right when we stood up on there, this big wave came over us. And I don't know the connection to it other than that I came home and wrote that tune. I don't know. It just, there's a bunch of disjointed ideas with that stuff too. Sometimes, like most of these songs, it's not one idea.
Well, of course, they're songs. Yeah. They're not documentaries.
Yeah, and I link all
okay,
these.
Okay, what about
I
Baby Blue? Because I'm finding some. Now, this is just my observation, but I've seen some common ground. These are all about little kid stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, tell
me about Baby Blue. Baby Blue, I'm going by the fucking title, right?
Yeah, it's more just like back to childhood stuff. It's I don't know. These are all times that meant that hold a place for me, and I don't know. I don't know why the writing almost always goes back to something that.
Well, I'm just talking about these three tunes, okay?
No, yeah.
Because these are the three that you picked.
These are the same as the others.
These are the three that you picked that me and Larry played. I think me and Larry recorded like 20 or something songs with you.
Yeah, we did 20.
Yeah, okay. So these are the three you picked. And I don't think all 20 are about being a little kid. But anyway, then hour two here with songs without me and Larry. What about them? They got same kind of tema, same kind of theme?
Yeah, which ones, Mike? What's the name?
Well, Gay Good Morning, The Spell Has Been Broken, Humorless World, Bless Your Little Heart. Bless Your Little Heart sounds like kid thing, but the other three don't sound so much like kid stuff.
Bless Your Little Heart, I had a baby who you referred to, we still refer to her as my little, the new little shipmate.
The new
And she, I don't know, I wrote that one looking at her swinging in the little swing right after she was born. And then Gay Good Morning, a lot of these tunes are based around when I worked in an old age home as well. And I have notebooks filled with stuff like observations and stuff during that. So Gay Good Morning is based on working in an old age retirement home. I was an activities director there.
And the spell has been broken?
Yeah, that's like your heroes. You know, that one's about like meeting your heroes and being and realizing that, you know, they're people, you know, and they're going to come along with
the demons. Maybe it does have a young thing, because you could consider it maybe a coming of age thing.
Of course.
Oh, what about same thing with Humorless World. You find out, whoa, the dirt behind the daydream.
That's right. Yeah, and it's like and people, Humorless World is kind of like people revealing themselves that you thought were one way, and then they're another. They're one day they're a pacifist, and then the next day they're down to like hurt somebody because they don't go along with their frame of thinking of today, you know, or something.
Well, Humorless, it don't sound like there's another way. It seems like, but you know, look, songs are like we agreed, they're not documentaries. They're weird kind of complex layers of kind of feelings and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, we're at the end of the second hour here, March 23, 2024, edition What Peter, so special guest Almighty. Hold tight for hour three. March 23, 2024, it's the third hour of the What for Pedro show.
Is it legit after all he would say? Flow, I'll never leave it alive.
me round. We did not have the sound to whisk us away. I can't be bad, but...
Drop.
There's a solace found on corners almost every other block. A place to get away from life, it's where all the injured flock. So come away from all your troubles when you see six letters shine. D-O-N-U-T-S, it's our beacon in the night. Come inside, it'll be alright. There's too many tears upon the tabletops and donut shops. They're running down onto the floor. There's too many tears upon the tabletops and donut shops. They're running down onto the floor. On the floor. Have a coffee and a cruller, a plain cake or apple fritter. Think about where everything went wrong. Just have a sugar twist, a bear claw, and old-fashioned or a long john. Think about where everything went wrong. 'Cause anytime you find it's hopeless, always know can escape. Most times you'll find them open, 'cause they're mostly open late. Come away from all your troubles when you see six letters shine. D-O-N-U-T-S, it's our beacon in the night. Come inside, it'll be alright. There's too many tears upon the tabletops and donut shops. They're running down onto the floors. There's too many tears upon the tabletops and donut shops. They're running down onto the floors. On the floors. On the floors. So have a coffee and a cruller, jelly-filled or chocolate sprinkle. Think about
Pedro's show. Start off the third hour with You Don't Have to Like Them, Almighty Op. It's deja vu all over again, people you don't know, but you would if we told you. Then, let me explain this again about the Candy Bomber. Candy Bomber is the name of studio, Tempelhof, Berlin. Tempelhof Airfield was used in the Berlin airlift to save Berlin, the Cold War things, late 40s. And Larry, who's the drummer man on the first few songs that you heard of this episode, he's a good friend of Ingo, and they've done a lot of work there, and they put out a compilation called The Candy Bomber Sessions. So here's a bunch of songs, you know, since the tie-in with Larry and Almighty here, Black Molly, Slow Blow, North, and Loco Homo. And there's all kinds of different people playing. I know Ingo himself is also a bass player. So, and Larry plays all kinds of stuff. Besides drums, he can also do keyboards. And right? Didn't he help you with some of that stuff? Yeah, and vibes and stuff. And then we had, finally, Tabletops and Donut Shops. And, yeah, we were talking about, you know, different songwriters have different ways of putting on titles. With you, it could be anyway. A lot of people that I have on the show, they got to put it on at the end. It's the last thing they think of. That and the bass part. Got so many people who put on bass last. Now, me, I always ask you this question because I have to start with the title because I need a focus so everything can aid and abet to get that whatever expression across. And then I like writing on the bass. Sometimes I'll write a little on guitar, but I like the bass being kind of open-ended so the collaborator can have a lot of room. You know, it's not as melodic as a keyboard or a guitar or something. Now, a lot of people, they can't handle that. God, why didn't you write the fucking song on a kick drum or cymbals? You know? But people like Nels Klein, they love it because they like the room and stuff. But some people, So, you know, one of the reasons I got the Watt for Pedro show is show that there's lots of different ways to make music. So, we don't have to like them. We were talking, kind of a dress rehearsal for the spiel here. If you want to know the truth, people, I forgot to hit the record button. 20 fucking 3 years of doing the show and I'm still blowing clamps. But before, Almighty was doing these fucking songs for the services. But this was different. This, he was actually going to make a record. It was Johnny's kind of suggest, but, you know, you took the ball and ran with it. So some of these songs you wrote, are they from during the services thing where you're writing for the services? So you're actually having your little marionettes sing these things, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
But then came a stage, especially when your baby came and stuff. That's got to be past that, right? These are more for like the album. And do you consider it kind of different territory?
Yeah, a lot of things changed for me after. I don't know. I started saying, I think a lot of this insecurity stuff hit the road whenever I had a little kid. And I don't know, I started thinking of it in a different way. And then at the same time, around the same time of meeting Johnny, and he was, you know, he said, geez, you can do all the stuff with your voice. He's like, why don't you try to do all the things that you can do and don't just try to keep it as like something you're making in your bedroom. Like, let's try to make some. It was just a really nice opportunity and something I had been wanting to do for a long time too, because I do want people to see it as, you know, it is a music thing that I'm doing as well as a visual thing, but I don't want them to think that it's just like, oh, that's, you know, just the guy that does the puppets and it just happens to be doing this music. I take the music, you know, I take the music really seriously. I work on it really, really hard almost every day. And Johnny really opened that. He really opened it up, and he's a really good gauge. As when Larry was over at the house here too, Larry is a really, really honest about, you know, he's like, why don't you do that in this other voice? Because I'd give him three or four versions of the same thing, and then he would say, I really like this because of how the voice works in these parts. So we had all these different options, and they were both really honest with helping me do that here, especially here at the house. I was a little more restrained at United Recording. I'd never met you, you know, especially on the first one. I'd never met you before, had never played with Larry before either. And so I was a little more, a bit timid, and you know, you're in this huge studio. I mean, you chaps have worked in those kind of places before. I certainly had, and I was sitting there wondering why the hell I was, you know, what the hell am I doing here, kind of thing. But I'm glad I knew, at least I knew the tunes I had written.
Yeah, but like these ones here, we don't have to like them, or Tabletops and Donut Shops. Like you said, some of the stuff, other tunes we discussed, obviously. Like the old folks home, Donut Shop. Yeah. I mean, this is before K-Town, right?
Oh no, those are you know, before or, you know, or during K-Town stuff. Yeah, some of the ones are before my
but,
very
but
first
then
record.
The baby. Yeah. I mean, how old's the baby? So they have to be way more recent, right?
Some of those are more recent. So some of the ones you're talking about,
that's what I'm getting at. I understand you try hard. I'm not doubting that, but I'm just saying, is there a difference?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think COVID made a big difference too, Mike, because I always hated how my voice sounded down in Koreatown. I couldn't hear myself, and I knew that I could sing better than that down in Koreatown. And then COVID happened, and I started doing my show as a live, you know, a streaming thing. And I thought, geez, this is so. There's so many things I like better about this than being on the corners. The corner is its own thing, and I absolutely love it. I'll always love it, but. As far as music goes, I thought, geez, this really sounds like me. And I think that started to make me write bigger tunes, too. I started writing on the piano more in the last right before COVID. I was learning how to play piano. So I started writing. That's how I learn how to play. It's just instead of doing covers, I just write my own progressions and stuff. And I was playing the piano. And then all these other, I don't know what it is about the piano, but I write things on the piano. I'd never write on the guitar. And then I think everything just changed around that time. Then the baby came and that changed me in a whole nother way. And, it's, you know, singing tunes with her and she gives ideas too as a 3-year-old, throws in little ideas that I might not have thought of. And, so much has changed. And it's seen in that progression of what I'm making. The last five records that I've made a ton of them, little records over the years. But yeah, these last handful that I've made are quite different. And I don't know, it's like taking myself serious, like where I'm being pretentious about it, but serious where I'm like, you know, I can sing and I really enjoy singing and I want to try. I love singing harmony parts and writing harmony parts and all that stuff. Doing all that with Larry was really fun too, singing harmony parts with him and coming up with all that kind of stuff. I just love doing all that. And that's all just gotten more, a little more sophisticated in the last four years especially.
Okay, let's play Love and Hate It.
Say you wanna disappear as you further lock yourself in, surround yourself with what isn't real, pretend it's real. It is done to make you happy. Next thing they stab some words in your heart. Smiles growing from your loved and hated us all. I rise as much as I fall. I want an end as much as I want it to start. Now as much light as there is dark. So you wonder how you ended up here. Uninvolved, or is this your calling? You find yourself going back and forth for what it's worth. Who are they who are part of your life? Who are those voices calling? They build you up to then make you small. They need you small. I've loved and hated us all. Rise as much as I fall. I want to end as much as I want it to start. Now as much light as there is dark. Sometimes they're wishing you well. Sometimes they smile. Sometimes you just can't tell. Sometimes you
wanted to start now, as much light as there is dark.
for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. A Mighty Out, Love and Hate It. Then some more from that Candy Bomber Sessions compilation. Switches, Butterfist, Blue Melon. Finally, Almighty Op with 16 Black Horses. So, you want to speak to those two tunes?
Loved and Hated. I'm, as you know, Mike, working with me, I don't know a lot about theory, but Loved and Hated is one of my favorite like progressions or structures that I've written. It's where I started writing. There's a lot of little parts and little changes and stuff in there. I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, that's and then that was another one. I had that. I've loved and hated them all in my wallet for a while, and then I wrote that little structure, and I don't know why it was like, oh, that's the perfect time for that little thing. It fell in there. And then the rest of the words just fell in place. And, I'm real, real proud of that little structure right there. 16 Black Horses is an old, a really old one, probably from the early 2000s. And, it's, it's a tuple.
You cut out just, there. I'm sorry, you have to repeat because you cut out there.
Oh, after 16 Black Horse?
Yeah, you're cutting out. Are you walking around or something on a Wi-Fi?
No, I'm just sitting here.
Yeah, because it's cutting out and stuff. Please repeat.
From about Loved and Hated?
16 Horses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 16 Black Horses is one I wrote probably in like the early 2000s. And it's just a little two chord number, and another one, just lyrics just fell into place, and I'm just sitting there playing those two chords over and over, and just started singing that, and it's fun. I don't know what
you keep describing. I get how you make these; they just come and come together. Yeah, but I'm asking you more. Do you want to say something about them, like what they're about, what you're trying to get with the words? Not really. I understand the process.
Yeah, no, that one's no, just more or less like listen to it. There it is. I don't want to get too deep into the meaning of each one, but there it is. What you hear is what you get.
Like for example, I'll take something in my life. I called this record Double Nickels on the Dime. All these people assume I'm talking about some kind of numbering system of the highways, and I wasn't. Right. We were talking about driving the speed limit exactly. So I say that just to clear up some misunderstandings or some. So, that's what I'm trying. When you, of course, the art, the piece, the work, it should stand on its own. But if you wanted to offer some insights, to understand these things. But they fall into place for you. But that's an internal logic that you have. Now, you don't have to share that. But if you want to, I'm giving you the opportunity.
I wrote so long ago, Mike, that I think it's like commenting on being a little kid or something. And I can't speak to what that person was thinking. But it is something that people, I don't know what it is about that one. It's always requested.
I mean, why are they horses? Why are they black? Why is there 16 of them, Mike? I mean, I could get into it.
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, but I could get into it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I understand about how you put them together and they're, it's a little number that the words. Yeah, I understand that. But if you want to like, or loved and hated, like what is loved? What is hated?
Well,
was
people,
it a situation?
People are like,
you're in a situation or something like this, or are you talking about? Are you observing? Are you more third person? Because a lot of your music sounds to me in the words first person.
Sure. Yeah.
But that could be elusive too. Remember, it's art and artifice, right? So you don't know. Do you remember Frank Morgan in The Wizard of Oz? He said, "Pay no attention." This is at near the end of the movie, to Dorothy. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Right.
He was the motherfucker behind the curtain. remember how he got there. The balloon just crash-landed. They made him the fucking wizard, right?
Boss. He's the head honcho, right?
Yeah, but what was he? It was total accident, and he knew that. And then she was kind of catching on. And I think that's the whole idea. There's no place like home. If you get to it right, if you really want to understand something, well, a lot of people say follow the money. That's kind of cynical, but maybe there's something to it.
Well, you know, like some of them, I want to tell you exactly what they mean, and then other ones, I like the ambiguity, like where somebody
absolutely. That's why I said
they make it into something that I never could, and then you go, I would have never thought.
No, and also it's artifice.
I like their version better. Their version.
It's artifice too. You want it? No, like for example, I wrote a song where I used the word fucking as an adjective and as a verb. You know, we went up to Hollywood and we were fucking corn dogs. You could say like we were being like clowns, but you could also say we were being kind of deviant, hentai, you know, perverted kind of thing. So I like that ambiguity. So right. I put it there because, like we agreed, these aren't documentaries, right? They're layered kind of feelings things.
Right. And
that's what I want you to get
too,
into.
Like things that.
That's what I want to get, if you want to. Now, you don't have to. That's your music, right?
Some of them are so, there's unrelated things, and almost all of them, I always throw these other things and have nothing to do with the theme of the tune, and it does that for me, too. At the end, the ambiguity is also something like a game I play with myself, where at the end it goes, well, what does this actually mean? Rather than something where you're like, here's the story. We did this, and then we came down here, and then this happened. So you did like this.
That's like a narrative, right? That's more like a narrative telling a story.
Like a narrative, right. And so like anti-narrative.
Yeah, but some people, that's totally their songwriting style. They like to tell stories.
Right.
But
I don't do too much of that. There's a couple of tunes like that. But I don't really do too much of that. It's more like playing games.
I think some songwriters use that as kind of a little red herring to beguile you.
Right.
To get you comfortable with assumptions to wake your ass up.
Sure.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Johnny Cash.
And this is why I like to talk about this stuff in a way and what, you know. It is ridiculous in a way because that's why you make the work of art to speak for itself anyway. Why do you have an explanation? Okay. But I said if you're into that, I'm giving you the opportunity.
And it's not this thing to like fool. It's not to like fool people out of a narrative or something either. It's like I just like to play with it and then think about what it means sometimes after. Like, here's a bunch of these ideas and.
Well, let me. Is there an?
Here's this thing that's related to that idea.
Speaking about relating, let's talk about analogies. When you're making your little puppet plays, now you got narratives going on there, right? Or are they just total non sequitur kind of.
No, it's totally disjointed cacophony of stuff. It has not
like Monty Python.
Very rarely. Yeah, very rarely any kind of like. There's no story being told with the puppets in any way.
Oh, okay.
There's a shadow puppet thing I used to do that had a little bit of a trajectory to it or a tiny bit of a narrative. But no, I actually when I was telling you about people helping me with the service, they'd come down and I love people who aren't. Quote unquote professional or like SAG puppeteers, because I'd go, they'd say, what do you want me to do? And I just hand them the stuff and go, just like play with, you know, like just play with them. It brings you back into being that little kid thing. And then, I don't know, there's something that happens when somebody doesn't know what they're doing with that stuff too, that the audience that was down there or the people, the attendees would see that there's this thing happening that the people who are doing it aren't trying to give you any ideas or convey something. They're just playing. And then all this fun stuff.
You know, a professional person could do that too. And they would call it.
I agree.
Listen, they would call it improvising.
Right. Okay. I agree.
You're talking about stuff that's not.
People who are just like, don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, but you're talking about stuff that's not scripted. And also amateurs. Right. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So none of your puppet stuff is scripted. But your tunes are scripted. I know some dudes, they make up lyrics on the fly. You know, there was that. Remember that band Green on Red? That guy would make up words every time different. Same music.
Right.
That would be
difficult. In Koreatown where there will be something like someone would approach the stage, just a person, like a stumble upon person. I'd like incorporate what's going on right then into the tune that already had set lyrics. And like you said, it's just improvising something that's going on. So,
well, it's not just. It could be like a key component. I mean, comedians do it, you know, lots of musicians. I just did a gig last night. You know, there was no tune. You had to just make up for it. It's kind of a pants shitter. It's scary. Like a no net, right? Tightrope walking.
Do you get scared, Mike, playing? Do you get nervous before
scripted shit and unscripted shit. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I was not a born entertainer. I got the music beat my friend. Strippy, like you said, how things work out. Now, what's next for you? We only got a couple minutes, so what's next?
Well, I took a little break. I've had some, we had some family troubles and a bunch of legals. I can't believe that I've gotten tied up in some like legal issues with some things, some very scary situations. So my life changed dramatically. And it's all getting back on track now. So in the meantime, I made a few records I'm going to keep making. I have a bunch of little, records that I'm going to keep making. I just set up a new studio at a new pad. And I'm going to start doing some online, basically like almost like a public access show, but it's just a ton of characters that I've made. I have some people who are involved with that with me. And then some tours. I want to, I've never toured Almighty Op, and there's a bunch of talks of doing that. So I want to do, I want to start doing the traveling show again, but instead of Koreatown, just go into all these different places. So we talked to this gentleman who might have us come over to Europe and do. And when I say we, it's me and my partner in this right now is Shambles. And then Crumbo is my daughter. And we're going to do that right now. And another two friends are going to maybe help us out with that. So it's quite an undertaking. I'm a little overwhelmed with it because I'm not used to doing the Koreatown show right now. I'm a little out of the loop with that. I can't believe it, but I am. But yeah, I want to do some tours and kind of come out of my shell that I've been in for a couple of months here. I also do a live show almost every Sunday. I do a Just Tunes. Sometimes some puppets. I do that on Instagram at Almighty Hop.
Yeah, if people want to find more out about you on the internet, the corporate website.
Yeah, I got the AlmightyHop.com. I got Almighty Hop Bandcamp.
Oh, that ain't corporate. That's you directly, right? Almighty Hop people. AlmightyHop.com. Go there. Correct. Probably from there you can go everywhere else.
And Bandcamp. Go to the Bandcamp. I got a ton of albums on there.
Yeah, but you probably got a link from there. Because, look, everybody used to be on that MyFair.
If you look up Almighty Op, the Bandcamp will pop up.
What I'm saying is a danger about being hitching your wagon to a corporate website is they might go down. Everybody had a MyFair. Waste of space place, and look what happened to that shit.
Right.
So I tell people, you know what I mean? Don't,
right.
You know what I mean? Like a telephone pole, you can, AT&T owns it, but you can staple some flyers on it, but don't like hitch your boat to it.
I hear you,
Okay. So, and that's the neat thing about having your own website. There's no filter, there's no middleman. It's like having your own fanzine.
It's true,
Yeah. So there's other places too. So, people, go to almightyop.com, and from there you can find out, like you said, you do performances once a week. Okay, that's great to know. And when are you going to start touring? Well, that information will be there, too. What about
I'm hoping the next couple of months here. That's the goal.
What about this music that we played on the show here? How can people listen to it? By going to that Bandcamp page?
The Bandcamp page has tons and tons of albums I put out over the years. And then the ones that had you and Larry on it, I haven't released those yet. I don't know why. But I'm going to put those out probably next month when I get over this little hump in my life, which is just about to remedy itself.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best of luck with this new adventure and stuff. And when you want to come back on, just let me know, okay?
I appreciate it, Mike.
Absolutely. People, it's been the most.
Contemplating the Engine Room is my favorite record of all time, so thanks for making that for me.
I made it for D Boone also, and my pop, maybe
it holds a good place.
Maybe
for me,
myself
Mike.
Too.
So
I got brave enough to fucking do that. March 23, 2024, at Dishwap Pedo. So people, keep your powder dry.